This is Be More Caring, a podcast exploring the lives of some of the men and women of Baltimore City who are slipping into, recovering from, or experiencing homelessness, and the individuals in their lives. Today, you'll be hearing from Michelle. Michelle's life took a sharp and unexpected turn that brought about that slow creep from stability and, in her case, privilege, to the oftentimes unforeseeable situation that so many people experiencing homelessness find themselves in. Michelle is an amazing storyteller, so I want to dive right in without my usual framing and let her share her experience. All right, meet Michelle. All right, what is your name?
Michelle. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Born and raised?
Born, and I'm born in Baltimore in a hospital, City Hospital. It was back in the 60s. It was called City Hospital, and now it's Bayview. John Hopkins owns it.
Michelle and I spent some time talking about her family. She mentioned she has two sisters.
I'm the oldest of three sisters.
Okay.
And we're all 3 years apart. You know, out of the three sisters, out of my two siblings, two of us are professionals. You know, I'm a registered nurse, and my youngest sister, she's an English professor.
And several children.
They don't even really know I'm on these stairs. I think they think I'm in a shelter. They don't know that I'm actually living on a pair of stairs.
Why don't you tell them?
Why should I? That's a burden. Why? You know? Why shouldn't I worry about that? Kids have a propensity to take on your problems, whether it's bullshit or legitimate.
Have you ever been inside of a homeless shelter? I've been to a few at this point. That's a fairly recent development on my end. What strikes me is how organized everything is as people go about their days. It's almost like the workers and the clients use each other's energy to propel themselves forward. You get the sense of the individual working in concert with the organization as a whole to keep everything moving. Well, Michelle walked me through a bit of that process from her point of view, and it was all pretty amazing.
You know, I wake up in the morning to my traffic alarm clock. That's my alarm clock, traffic.
Okay.
And I get up, and I walk around to my sister's lodge. My sister's place is 17 West Franklin Street. And they serve us coffee. Breakfast is from 7:30 to 8:30. And they open their doors up at 7. And you go in. And so there's dozens and dozens and dozens of women that are rolling their suitcases and bringing their bags in. And they line them up in the hallway. There's a really long hallway. And then you go into the dining room and you sit. And you're served either coffee or tea while breakfast is being prepared. And it just depends on, you know, what's donated. You know, this morning we had farina cream of wheat and a slice of fruit. Or it could be French toast and sausages, or it just depends. There's a lot of volunteers.
Okay.
Lots of volunteers. God bless the volunteers. And when they come, they really bring good food. And so that's from 7:30 to 8:30. Breakfast from 7:30 to 8:30. In the between that, at 8, storage, they all announce storage. Storage is basically a part on the first floor. They're basically like three offices, basically, that are empty that the women can put their suitcases. That's what they mean when they announce storage at 8. Storage is open, so you know to go down another little small hallway and you bring your suitcases. And there's someone that's taking your name. How many bags you got? Three? They give you a piece of paper, and you're taking your bags, and you put them in this corner, and you put, you know, and so on and so forth. So then that's at 8. And then you come back at 8:30, sit and talk and chat. At 8:30, and you sign up. From 7:30 to 8:30, there's breakfast, there's storage, and then there's a sign-up sheet. And basically, this is the sign-up sheet. It serves a dual purpose from my perspective. One, it is in-house. It directs and it governs how the day's going to go. You sign up. And so what do you need? Shower. You write down, I want a shower. I need my phone charged. I need to use the phone. I need to see a case manager. I need to pick up my mail. So that's an in-house and dual purpose. And the second purpose, I think, the reason why we sign up and we write this down is so that it can be submitted to the higher uppers, so they'll know just how much funding they need and how many numbers, you know, the numbers of women that are coming in. And then 8:30 we go up and we take showers, and there are two day rooms with flat screen TVs. You're in the air condition. I personally put a fan together. I love putting things together. I just so funny when people put things together because they never read the damn instructions. That is the funniest shit to me. And I just take the instructions and I read them and I put them together. But I put a fan up. But they're two rooms, and they're with flat screen TVs. I think they're like 45-inch TVs, and they're like maybe 30 chairs in each room. And there are always donations. There's art classes, jewelry making classes. There's some GED classes that are supposed to be going on. You know, so it's a plethora of things to do. Or you can go across, you can go to the library.
Save for a very, very few specific exceptions, none of the people I talk with expected this to be part of their story. Michelle is no different. Michelle had a great career, a family. How did this happen? Where did things take that turn?
I got that letter. That was it. That letter. And I called my mom, and I was hyperventilating. It was unbelievable. Yeah. I was hyperventilating, you know, when that letter.
That letter, she said, with absolutely zero hesitation. But how could one letter lead to the fall of a career professional? Michelle explained.
You know, prior to 2006, when you graduated with a nursing degree, you sat for your state boards and you got a job. After 06, they came up with this fingerprinting thing.
Michelle is referencing House Bill 1318 and Senate Bill 769. For all intents and purposes, these are good bills. The synopsis of Senate Bill 769, which was cross-filed with HB 1318, states that it's a bill, quote, requiring specified applicants for licensure or certification by the State Board of Nursing to submit to a criminal records check as a condition of licensure or certification, end quote. It requires individuals who are applying for certain roles to be fingerprinted and have those fingerprints cross-referenced with, okay, the Criminal Justice Information System Central Repository of the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. I can get behind that. The basic idea is that people who have offended in the past should have monitored access to controlled substances like those found in medicine carts. Drug addiction is a real issue, and this bill tries to address a real-world problem in a reasonable way. Michelle walks us through what happened next.
So when they came up with this fingerprinting thing, you had to get fingerprinted. Whether you had your nursing license for 50 years or whether you were a new grad, and in 06, everybody was getting fingerprinted. And my fingerprints revealed to them that back in 1988, I was arrested for possession of marijuana. Back then, marijuana was like, you know, right. You got time for marijuana. You know, and so what they did was, because they were looking at these nurses that were popping pills, and you are the governing force in giving these individuals licenses to practice, so we're going to hold the state liable. I guess that's the viewpoint or the perspective. So they started fingerprinting, and so once it's revealed to the Maryland Board of Nursing, the licensure agency, that you had priors with drugs, alcohol, some type of mental illness, then it's incumbent upon them to do something about it. So when I had the fingerprints done, these charges from 88 came up, and so they put me on a contract. I'm like, you know, okay, what else you got? Because at this point, I'm sober, clean, you know, and I'm just doing my thing. And the contract had 26 stipulations, everything from you can't work overnight because it's less supervision. You can't work in an ER because they've got heavy duty narcs. You can't, you know, you have to have urine, random urines, which I was like, you know, I didn't give a crap, you know, I'm clean, you know, right. But whatever, you know, you know. One of the stipulations on this contract was, you know, you cannot accept any registered nurse position until we, the Maryland Board of Nursing, approves it. Okay? Because, remember, you know, the state's liable at this point. Somehow, legislation, I'm not sure what, but in 06, something came down the pike, and Maryland took the responsibility of being liable for giving licenses. And so once it's revealed to them that you've got an alcohol or drug problem or mental illness problem, then it's incumbent upon them to do something about it. This is my perspective. This is how I saw it. So they put me on this contract. Now, they say that this contract was voluntary. To me, I felt like the way they were all sitting around this table in this conference room. It seemed to me like it was either you agree to this contract or we're not going to give you a license to practice. So, you know, it was never said, but it was insinuated. The contract was no big deal. So, random urines, this, that, and the third, and it's no problem. One of the stipulations, and again, it's like, you know, they're monitoring you, and this is a 5-year contract now. But, you know, what else am I going to do, you know? So, you know, Clifton T. Perkins was hiring for registered nursing positions, and at that particular time, I was in between jobs. And it was a state position, and it was working with the mentally ill. It's criminally insane. It's the only forensic mental health institution in the state of Maryland. And I love forensics. I love mental health. And I was like, yeah. And out of 33 nurses, I was the one that they were impressed with, and they hired me. I will never forget this, Aaron, because the start date was on the 17th of September. Keep it in mind, my responsibilities as it relates to this contract, that I can't take this job until the Maryland Board of Nurses approves it. So what do? I call the Maryland Board of Nursing. I inform them of this new job. So they were like, okay, well, you need to send us the job description. Okay, it's a registered nurse position. It's governed by the Maryland Nurse Act. So, like, what do you mean, what's the job description? You know what I mean? That's like, you know, tell me what the job description is of a mechanic. Like, duh. But, you know, so I send them this information. To make a long story short, the start date for this job came, and the Maryland Board of Nursing still did not approve this job. And so I'm like, okay, what do I do? So I will never forget it. Like, the night before the job, I called my mom, and I'm like, Mom, the Board of Nursing has not approved this job. And I start tomorrow. What do I do? So she said, well, I don't really think it would be a big deal. She was like, just go. She said, if you don't show up, that's
done.
Yeah, you're done if you don't show up on your first day. She said, once they get around to approving it, then you still got your job. Well, that's what we thought. My third day at the job, on orientation, there's a guy that comes down in the orientation room, and he's like, Michelle, you're wanted upstairs in human resources. And I go upstairs, and this lady, she's putting the phone down, and she looks at me, and she's like, I just got the phone with the Board of Nursing. You're not supposed to be here. And that was the beginning of my demise. She said, I'm going to give you a choice. You can either resign or I will fire you. So I said, well, I will resign. She said, I'll resign. I said, I'll resign. So, you know, my first year as a nurse grad, my W-2s, I was making $72,000. I mean, this was like no experience, green behind the ears. The money was good. And once they suspended my license to practice, and by the way, Maryland is part of a compact. So I can go to Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, and Delaware, the Delmarva, and I can practice and not have to sit for any state boards. D.C., they have their own thing. And but that was it. And because you have a lot of straight knows people or that look at people that have a criminal background as people that have an inability to follow instructions anyway. And so I appealed it. Now my dad paid this attorney $6,000. I picked him because he when I read his bio, he had a nursing degree, and then he followed up with that with a law degree. So I said, you know what? I think this would be just the right guy to represent me during this appeal process. He charged me $6,000, and they helped. And the Maryland Board of Nursing, they govern their own rules. It's really hard it's like almost impossible to go over top of them. At any rate, once they suspended my nursing license, of course, I can't practice as a nurse. I can't pay my $1,500 rent, and I can't pay this car note to this Suburban truck that I just bought. And so that was it. And so, fortunately, I had money saved up so that when they suspended my license, I was still able to pay my lease off, my rental lease off. And then I'm in the process of getting my credit because my next step was I was going to buy a house, and, you know. And that was it. So we moved to my parents for a year, and then that was... I left my parents' house in May. It was Mother's Day 2016. I moved into Weinberg, Code Blue. My kids went with my grandmother, with their grandmother. And I stayed in Code Blue.
Why didn't you stay with them?
Huh?
Why didn't you stay with them?
Well, Code Blue.
No, with your...
My mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of us will probably be buried underneath that house.
Okay.
Yeah, so. And she's, like, huge. Like, she's bigger than... She's, like, sideburns and a chin strap. Like, she's... She probably could beat me and you up, yeah. So, it probably would have been me underneath the house.
And here we are, years later. Michelle snaps right to that moment as her pivot point. And how could she not? It wasn't really just one thing. Not really. She made some bad decisions when she was younger. You can't, and she doesn't deny that. And I, for one, am in favor of a rule that seeks to combat possible misuse of our medical system. HB 1318 and SB 769 seem to be doing that. On the other hand, it seems a bit ridiculous that someone's entire life was derailed because of their behavior 30 years ago. I know that it's natural to be a bit skeptical, and I haven't and won't reach out to the board or anyone else to verify this take on things. This is Michelle's story to tell, one that if she's willing to share, I'm willing to try and take at face value. At face value, there aren't any villains or heroes in the story. At face value, a good law was passed. At face value, Michelle turned her life around and earned a professional license. At face value, she innocently broke an agreement, and the prescribed penalty was meted out. At face value, Michelle and I are now talking to each other on the stoop in Baltimore as she steadfastly tries to right the ship.
Some years ago, before I was in this situation, I will never forget it. I had stopped at a drive-thru Dunkin' Donuts, and I got me a coffee. And I'm driving out in my new truck that I just bought. And I heard this voice, Aaron, and you know what it told me? You will silence the cries of the homeless. You will be used to silence the cries of the homeless. Way before I even knew how it felt to sleep on some steps. And I'm trying to figure out how, you know, where am I at in this process and what does my creator have for me to do? I'm praying because I believe, you know, I'll be honest with you. Prior to being homeless, Aaron, I was the most judgmental person on the planet. I think my spiritual gift was generosity. I've always been that way. I mean, it is nothing for me to give. I mean, even if it means I don't have, like, it is so nothing to me. Mm-hmm. And so, I would never judge homeless people. I mean, I would judge. What I meant to say was, I would, like, if I'm driving and I'm at a red light, I would give money. Mm-hmm. And that homeless person would never know what I was thinking. But I was thinking, what did they do? They did something wrong for them to be homeless. They're being punished. That's why they're homeless. It's something that they didn't do. Just judging. And you would have never convinced me in a million years, making my $72,000 a year, that I would be sleeping on some stairs. And I'm the homeless one asking for money and asking for something to drink and asking for a cup of coffee, you know.
I asked Michelle if she had any closing words for us.
The lady around the corner, she was around the corner in that house. There's a house around there. It's a rooming house for, like, families. I see a lot of moms and kids.
Oh, okay.
It was like 7 o'clock in the morning, and she said, you want this? And it was a can of potted meat. And I don't like salty stuff. But a lot of times I feel like I have to appease people that offer me things. So I said, yeah. I said, but you know what? I really could use $1.36 for a cup of coffee, because 7-Eleven, if you keep your cup, you can get refills, and the refills are $1.36 no matter what size. She said, oh no. You can have this. Well, I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to give you money. My train of thought on that is, what I do with whatever monetary funding you give me, that's the burden that I have to carry. That's the answer that I'll have to give to God when it's time for me to meet my maker. What I want people to know, or what I would like from people when they pass me, is just speak to me and act like I'm normal. You know, a smile will be nice. Don't be ashamed. I think some people just don't know what to say. You don't have to be ashamed. You just have to use your, everyone has an inner instinct. And, but you know, talk to me and ask me how my day is going. Smile would be nice. And a cup of coffee would be nice.
As I conduct these interviews, I have a lot of the questions that some of you ask me run through my head. In particular, the ones that start with, yeah, but what about, Or, but how do you know? And I get it, I do. Be More Caring is, first and foremost, an opportunity for folks to share their version of their life's progression, or as Michelle refers to it, their homeless journey, without any pushback. Try keeping this in mind as you consider Michelle's story. Michelle's story is one that would have been really easy, probably the easiest, to go through and check out. And a very significant part of me was tempted to do just that. I'm glad I didn't, though. I focus on what I think is the takeaway of her experience. Michelle's path to her situation is particularly striking, and that it's one that reminds me that this can happen to literally any of us. All right, that'll do it. Again, I appreciate you sticking with me through the gaps in episode releases. These recordings are done as the opportunity arises, and I'm realizing that this means it may take some time to find people willing to talk. These individuals are opening up to a complete stranger, well, complete strangers, actually, about what may be one of the most difficult parts of their lives. I 100% appreciate your patience with me as we try to share their stories. All right, that'll do it. Thanks for being a part of the solution.